is from Dr. Karen Ehnert. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Very good.
Yeah, I had practice last year. Karen has a DVM and a dual master's in preventative veterinary medicine from the University of California, Davis. She has 9 years as a county epidemiologist and 13 years at the LA County Department of Public Health, and she thought that adding 13 and 9 made her old.
No. It's all a matter of perspective.
I
keep on having students that weren't even alive when I graduated. That's when I think I'm getting old.
I know, I have things, never mind. Things underneath my toenails older than students.
So. Okay, thank you for coming here late at night, because I know a lot of people want to go to restaurants. But first I want to thank my co-authors, Dr. Robert Kim Farley. My boss is a co-author, along with Dr. Beeler, Swanson, and Scott, who have been instrumental in the creation of the 2020 Healthy Pets, Healthy Families Initiative. And we're engaging the local community in One Health. So, you know, we were talking about the state, now we're going down to the family level. And I have no relationships to disclose, not making lots of money off of this. So the objectives of this talk, first I'm going to describe how the Healthy People 2020 framework may be used by a One Health collaborative to define goals and track progress, list at least 5 areas where improving pet health may improve human health, list how local animal health data may be used to support a local One Health initiative, list the goals of the 2020 Healthy Pets, Healthy Families Initiative, and identify how you can create a similar program in your area. This was already covered. A little different. My circles are empty. But the 2020 Healthy Pets, Healthy Families is the Los Angeles County's One Health Initiative, and it's a little unique in that it's modeled after Healthy People 2020, and our goal is to improve human and animal health, looking at that intersection, especially where pets are involved. And Healthy People 2020 is a 10-year national agenda where we're looking at improving human health throughout the nation, and this has been ongoing since the 1980s. Every 10 years, there's another set of goals, and they track how we're doing, and they look for best practices. So first, nationally, there's huge teams of people identifying areas. These are the priorities that we want to improve health. And then they set measurable objectives. They have to have data to do this. And then they try to increase public awareness. Often there's funding that goes along with it, which helps move towards these goals. And then they try to identify and promote best practices. And then over time, once you've implemented an intervention, they want to see that there actually has been improvement towards that goal. And those areas where there's improvement, they're likely to get funded in the future. Our Healthy Pets, Healthy Families is mirroring these same goals and objectives. And so we're trying to combine the idea of One Health into something that's been a model for the human health aspect since the 1980s. And this map framework was created for the Healthy People 2020. And MAP, it stands for Mobilize, Assess, Plan, Implement, and Track. And so trying to roll that into our little collaborative, you know, the first thing is to mobilize and develop a community coalition. And then assess, gather data, and often it doesn't exist, so you have to create your own. And then set local animal health goals. Plan, you have to identify what are the best interventions. And there's no money necessarily for our initiative, so we're looking at low or no-cost initiatives and trying to leverage partners, because there is a lot of enthusiastic people out there and a lot of volunteers and people willing to come forward and make a difference. And then implement, the idea is as a team, we jointly implement these programs and campaigns, and so that we have leverage of many partners to get our message out. And then track progress. That means you have to gather data over and over again, which is very time-consuming, but you want to monitor your impact so that you can identify what are the best practices. Did what we thought was going to happen, you know, we did this intervention, did it really move us towards that goal or not? So we sat down and we thought, okay, what areas are of importance to us? And of course, that was our own program. We came up with 7 areas that we were interested in. And it was areas that we thought we could pull in partners throughout the county. One of the areas that we work on is rabies control. So bite prevention was a big deal because There's probably in Los Angeles County 150,000 people bitten every single year. That is a lot of people. We know that there are 9,000 to 10,000 people ending up in the emergency rooms. So a big expanse. A lot of people are scarred for life from this. But nobody is acting on any effort to try to reduce the number of bites that occur. So we have 150,000 people just keep on getting bit and bit, and there are no government programs to try to reduce that. Disaster preparedness, of course, is a big aspect of all health departments. And we're concerned because we know that we probably have 2 to 3 million pets in Los Angeles County, and all our animal shelters are absolutely full. There is no place to take these pets if we had a massive disaster. A little fire here and there, fine, we can deal with that. But if there was a huge earthquake, there is no capacity to deal with this. So we have to mobilize the community to figure out how we could do this together. Obesity, unfortunately, obesity in pets is going up along with in people. And there's been quite a bit of documentation showing that there's a correlation between a dog being overweight and the owner being overweight. I had noticed just myself walking in my neighborhood that a lot of the dogs had never walked. They were just going crazy in their backyards and everything. And I thought, there's got to be something we can do about this. We did, as part of our assessment, and we found out a lot of pets were overweight and they were not being walked at all. However, in the literature and at the previous APHA meeting last year, I listened to a lot of people that have started various programs to try to improve exercise amongst people by having them walk with dogs. And dogs are great exercise buddies. They never say no. I have friends, and they tell me often it's too cold, it's raining, I don't want to walk, but dogs never say no. Another area that we're looking into is secondhand smoke. As you know, smoke can be dangerous to pets. It can cause cancer and respiratory problems in cats. The cigarette butts are very dangerous to the dogs, and they like to eat everything. But people are not aware of it. And there was just a single study. There's not a lot of literature in this yet, but they looked at smokers and they educated them about the risk to pets. And almost a third said this motivated them to consider quitting. So we're hoping to leverage that love of pets to cause smokers to stop smoking. We did find through our survey that, in fact, some of the pet owners had more often had a household smoker than non-pet owners. Not sure why that is the case. And spay-neuter, you know, why would that be important? We have found that for the animals that are running loose, they're frequently not neutered. They're out looking for a good time. So most of the hit-by-cars that are picked up by one animal control agency were intact males. On top of it, we see that unneutered animals are more likely to bite. So by advocating for pets to be neutered, less likely to have them roaming around and biting people. So it ties back into bite prevention. And vaccine-preventable diseases. Just like in people, where we're trying to stop that amongst children, we want to reduce vaccine-preventable diseases. And I was kind of shocked when I moved to L.A. because I had been in Monterey County and I thought all those diseases were gone. We were really good at vaccinating pets, and I had not seen parvo or distemper or anything. And I moved to Los Angeles, and parvo and distemper and panleukopenia are rampant, killing animals by the thousands. And I was shocked. And really, these are easily prevented by a vaccine that's very cheap. There's no reason for this to happen. And then zoonosis disease prevention. That's an area that we can always bring together physicians and vets in agreement that by providing basic health care to pets, we can reduce the transmission of zoonoses such as flea-borne typhus or tick-borne diseases or roundworm infection. And then to mobilize, who should we bring to the table? We want to develop data. So do they have data? We have to decide on prioritizing our messages, decide on campaigns, and we need people to help spread the messages. Of course, I'm with public health, so I'm thinking public health at the top. Health educators are so important as part of a group to craft messages and develop those campaigns. The local vets, they can help provide a lot of this data that we need to assess local animal health. And physicians, they can provide the human data that we need about obesity in people and smoking. Animal control officers, again, they help us on giving us information about vaccine-preventable diseases that are showing up in shelters, about spay-neuter, and other problems that they're seeing. And then We're even open to advocates or activists. You know, as they come in, they're enthusiastic, and they bring a lot of people in their social networks that can help spread the message. Sometimes our discussions get a little contentious, but we like to have exciting focus groups. So the first thing we did when we started this was develop our data. And I thought, well, this will be really simple. I'll create an online survey, and everybody will take it. But, you know, creating an online survey is not necessarily the best way to get all the information. We have had about 500 people fill it out online. It's quite long. That's probably what was stopping people from doing it, because it took a lot longer than they thought. But we weren't getting the numbers we needed, so we started doing in-person surveys. So we took that and we shortened it, and we went out to dog parks and then to vaccination clinics. We found out at the dog parks we were getting the owners that thought their pets were small children, and they were the pampered pets, so they have the highest health care, and it's probably not typical of the pets in Los Angeles County. So we went to low-cost vaccine clinics to get the demographics of people who are not providing the best health care for their pets. And then we assessed our local bite data, getting information from the hospital discharge data and the emergency room data, and plus our own data, and then animal disease data. We're lucky in that in Los Angeles County, infectious disease in animals are reportable to us. So we can get reports on parvo, and we can say, hey, shelter, you need to report every parvo case that you see or every distemper case. That gives us the ability to draw that data up and get a picture of animal health in our community. Based on some of the information, we then did targeted surveys on parvo, on built environment, and on pet obesity. So each time you get a little data, it makes you think of another survey you could do. My staff are kind of getting a little tired of doing surveys, but it really is important to get an idea of what the problem is before you start working towards interventions. So one of the areas is bite prevention. When we assessed our data, we found that children were at risk. That is kind of a given. And when we mapped it out, we found that it's not even throughout the county. There are higher risk areas, and it was associated with socioeconomic status. The lower socioeconomic status, the higher the rate of bites. And we also saw a lot more bites occurring in rural areas. So taking that data, we've decided that we're going to do bite prevention in schools, because the kids are kind of captive, they can't get away. And so we're hoping to be able to go in there and take a couple of zip codes and try out a bite prevention program, assess it, try to determine if their knowledge has increased. There's not a lot of literature out there about whether these education programs work, so we're hoping to develop that evidence to show that school-based bite prevention is actually efficacious. And then this is dog parvo. As I said, when I was in Monterey County, I never saw any cases, and here we have it throughout the county. Canine parvo, not the human parvo, for any of you that are in human health, is totally preventable by vaccination. It's only in dogs, and it's very easy to diagnose by the SNAP test. It can be done in-house, and it is extremely easy to prevent with the puppy shots. When we mapped out the cases, we were finding that there are hot spots in areas where there are almost no vet clinics. And then by surveying the owners, we found out the barriers are cost. In fact, people don't have cars, so they can't drive to get to a clinic that is 5 miles away. They don't let pit bulls onto our buses. So we were able to take this data to the local animal control agency, and they went into these high-risk areas and provided no and low-cost vaccinations repeatedly, and provided spay-neuter services too. Then on obesity, which is an area that I never really thought I was going to get involved with, but after we did our assessment and found out that there's a total mismatch in people's minds about their pets, and you know, we asked people, do you think your dog is overweight? Only 11% said yes, but half of them couldn't feel the ribs. You know, they're just fluffy. Oh. But we're looking at it and going, that's an 8, you know, on the scale. But people had no concept that their pet was overweight. And then we were saying, well, do you walk your dog? And only 43% walked their dogs daily. A lot of people never walked their dogs and figured the backyard was a sufficient amount of space. And then the shocking thing was 73% were free feeding their dogs. And dogs aren't known to stop when they're full. They just keep on eating. So we started, I thought, okay, I just got to get people to walk their dogs in local parks. So I had my staff assess 10% of the parks in Los Angeles County, and there are 1,200 parks, so that was 120 parks to assess. And they came back, and I was kind of shocked that they didn't assess some of the ones that they were assigned to, and they said there were drug deals going on in the parks. So that whole idea of having people go out to the parks, that probably wasn't going to work. So we went to another survey of built environment and barriers to walking, and the result is now we're moving to piloting dog-friendly walking groups in neighborhoods. The idea is for neighbors to come together and walk in their own neighborhood. Don't have to have a dog to walk, but you know, a whole group of people with three or four dogs is going to keep the criminal element out, and we're not going to ask them to walk at night. But we are just starting this, and we're just piloting it this year and hope to roll it out to our county next year. So for planning and implementation, last year we started holding coalition meetings. It took a while to build the coalition and ask people and convince them and show a little bit of data and get them enthused about it, but we've been meeting quarterly for 2 years now. And through that period of time, we've developed our framework report, which has goals for the year 2020. So we're looking to the future. This is not an initiative that is just going to be a year or two. We're going for 10 years and then another 10. The idea is not to stop. But we had focus groups, and we brought people together to identify what did they think, you know, were the goals, objectives, and now we're moving towards what are our interventions. So already I talked about some of them that we have already started using the Parvo data to see where there's a lack of pet health care and get good people to go in there and provide low or no-cost vaccine clinics to low-income neighborhoods. We're trying to work on a school-based bite prevention program, and we're trying to create community walking groups. So if you wanted to replicate this model, again, you know, the first thing you have to do is gather the data, and sometimes you have to create it. So if somebody wanted to do this, I could give them our survey and tell you which questions to drop, that it was just made the survey too long. So we've learned by doing this over and over again. But then you analyze it, and then you bring out the data, you present it to your community coalition, and you get them to come together and discuss it and what are their ideas of what should be our goals for the year 2020. Then together you decide on interventions. Then you have to track your results. You have to keep on collecting data to show that there's efficacy to what you're doing and continually report back to the community. So it's all very simple. There are some links if you're not familiar with Healthy People 2020. It has a lot of great tools there that can be adapted and used locally.